This episode of the Gospel Coalition podcast is sponsored by The Good Book Company, publisher of Same-Sex Relationships, a book by John Stott that considers the Bible's teaching with care, wisdom, and compassion. Visit www.thegoodbook.com for more. This is the Gospel Coalition podcast, where we seek to renew the contemporary church in the ancient gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm your host, Colin Hansen. If you know anything about Mark Dever, you know he makes disciples of Jesus Christ. The senior pastor of Capitol Hill Baptist Church in Washington, D.C., Dever has trained up and sent out dozens of pastors and other church leaders around the world. Many of them have worked with the Gospel Coalition. Some of them have worked for us. One of them, Matt Smethurst, is our managing editor. So, what's his secret? Is Dever unique, or can the rest of us learn from him? How do we lead our churches and create a culture of disciples who make disciples so that we can obey the great commission of Jesus Christ in Matthew 28, 18 to 20? Mark Dever shares biblical insight and experiential wisdom in his little book, Discipling, How to Help Others Follow Jesus, from Crossway. He joins me on the Gospel Coalition podcast to discuss what to look for in a disciple, how to disciple someone who's quite different from you, and much more. Thanks for taking the time, Mark.
Thank you, Colin. It's good to be with you.
So, Mark, why should the local church be the context for discipling relationships? Is it a problem that so many parachurch ministries make discipleship their focus?
It's great that so many parachurch ministries make discipleship their focus. I think it's wonderful when Christians help other Christians grow. There's no doubt that the way, the method that Jesus set up is to have his kahal, his ecclesia, his people, his assembly. So the local church is not just some strategy of, you know, InterVarsity or the Navigators or Crusade. The local church is Jesus' strategy, where we live near and are regularly interacting with people of different ages, but who have in common an allegiance to Jesus Christ. And we let each other get to know us honestly, and then we try to help each other as we walk through this life.
Mark, you seem to derive energy from being around people. Does it help to be extroverted to be a good discipler?
Well, I think on the front end, probably. I often find my more introverted brothers and sisters may be better at being self-reflective and have a lot of wisdom that comes with that. So I think there are pros and cons with both. So I think it's a wash in the end. I think you might have intake more easily, more quickly if you're an extrovert, but I think what you might have to give a value might be more if you're a little less extroverted than me.
Have you been able to learn from watching someone else and how they disciple someone whose personality is really different from your own?
Nobody comes to mind. I think if somebody's personality is really different than my own, I might appreciate things about them, but exactly what they're doing I probably wouldn't do because my personality wouldn't fit with it as well.
Makes
so
sense.
I've definitely seen and admired things that other brothers and sisters do. That doesn't necessarily mean that's what I'll do.
Let's try that from church history then. You've studied a lot of church history over the years. What have you learned about discipleship then from reading church history? Maybe some practices that stand out from Christians you've studied.
Well, I mean, you know, you can read most biographies of noted Christians with discipling as a major theme. I mean, you know, you think of Augustine and his early days at Cassia Kayakum, you know, before and after he's converted, he's there with a bunch of friends and they're sitting around talking all the time, sort of these idyllic, sponsored conversations. Or you think of his relationship with Ambrose, where Ambrose was very deliberately firm with him and knew what he was dealing with and kind of went after him, both in the pulpit as well as teaching, but then I think also personally. And then you can, you know, go all the way up to the Reformation, and you see how much Luther lived in community. I mean, his house was the Augustinian monastery when they sort of went through and everybody got rid of their monastic vows and their vows as nuns. They literally just made the Augustinian convent Luther's house, and then lots of people just kept living there. You know, he and Katie were up on the top floor and had some privacy, I think, but it was you know, his table talk came about because so many people were so often at his table. So Luther is very much doing things with others. I think Melanchthon, you know, the more scholarly friend down the street was probably not as much like that, but he was a profound scholar. And then the one that Melanchthon called the theologian, John Calvin, he was just so impressed with him. You know, Calvin strikes us as having a sort of more narrow personality, but when you look at his correspondence he kept up, you know, he kept up this huge correspondence. And I think today writing like that is not so much understood as discipling, but if you read through Calvin's letters or if you read through the letters of John Newton that I've been doing in my quiet time, you know, Newton is discipling people at a distance by writing these like two-page, thoughtful, theological, spiritual letters. So I think there's just a ton of discipling going on that's really constitutes a lot of church history.
It's very helpful, Mark. What when you're trying to figure out who you're going to spend time discipling, because it's a significant investment and you have limited time, limited energy to be able to invest. You've learned a lot of different things over the years through trial and error and also through this study. What's the first thing you look for in someone you'll devote time and energy into discipling?
Well, them taking initiative. So it's going to be, you know, like Paul tells Timothy in 2 Timothy to disciple those, reach those, teach those who you think will in turn teach others. So I want to look for those who I think will use themselves up to try to help and influence others. And those people may be going to the ministry. They may not be. They may just be business. So I just finished taking a walk with a guy who's in business. But, you know, he wanted to get lunch with me. He emailed me yesterday. My lunches are full. But I said, why don't we just take a walk in the morning? So we've just taken a walk. And, you know, we talked about a book that I'd given him to read a few weeks ago. And he's about 3/4 through that. And we just talked about his life and my life. And, yeah, just went through stuff like that. I don't promise people regular times. I just more like to say, look, when you're ready to get together again, just reach out to me, and then I can look at my schedule and see what fits in. So if the brother takes a lot of initiative and I see him twice a week, well, I mean, that's possible, you know, but if I only see him once every 3 months, that's also fine. Each relationship kind of finds its own level. So I take initiative toward a lot of people, and I'd say most people don't really respond. So then I work with the ones who respond.
Why do you think most don't respond?
Colin, you've been with me. Come on now. Next question.
All right. Fair enough. Why don't more pastors excel in discipling, Mark?
Colin, I'm not sure they don't. I mean, I think that's a lot of what pastors do. You know, from our prayers to our public teaching. But I get you mean one-on-one.
Well, I think in particular, let me clarify there.
Yeah.
You and to help listeners with the book is not about how to be Mark Dever. So I need to be clear about that. It's a genuinely helpful biblical take on how you can just help make people, you know, lead people toward Jesus and into greater depth and understanding. But I'm thinking the kind of direct influence you have on church leaders through those, you know, life-on-life encounters is not something that I see a lot of other pastors excelling in. And in part, a lot of pastors, at least that I've spent a lot of time with, which affects, you know, which is controlled by things like theology and gifting and things like that, they tend to prefer to be alone. They tend to prefer to study. And certainly they are discipling people through their preaching and through their writing in that regard. But the idea of spending a lot of time directly with people whose lives are messy, even spending time with other leaders, is a very draining and discouraging prospect for a lot of them. And so they limit themselves to some of those more study-based times. I don't think that's all bad by any means at all.
Yeah.
But that's why I'm saying some of what we're talking about here with you is somewhat unusual in what I see from other pastors. So that's the context for asking.
Yeah, I think certainly my experience, it's a great variety of discipling. So it's not like I'm spending time all with just leaders or I'm spending time with people whose lives are a mess. It's just various guys. And most of them are probably going to be, they're going to be members of this church or they're going to be pastors that I think will help and influence other pastors. So J.D. Greer, yesterday flew up here and he stayed the night with us. And then, so I had about 24 hours with J.D. And he and I just talked about everything under the sun. We talked about kids, we talked about marriage, we talked about life. just a wonderful time, low key. We did email together. I mean, you know, we just, you know, it was not high pressure. There was nothing he was particularly trying to accomplish, but he just called me and said, "Hey, can I just come hang out for a day?" And I, you know, one thing I've got is a very gracious wife who I think sees the fruit of this, and so allows some freedom in my schedule for this. But then at the same time, night before last, I got a guy hanging out here in the study who comes up because he's, man, he's just in, he's a member of the church, just ensnared in sin. And just wanted to talk through some things and pray about some things. So it's a huge variety. You know, it runs from other pastor friends to, you know, people who I hope are brothers, members of the church who are just kind of stuck in sin. And I think it's all of that counts as discipling. And I think pastors tend to do more the latter and not so much the former. I think we tend to more deal with people stuck in sin. I think I probably by nature, I like the window seat in an airplane. I want to see where I am on the ground. I want to try to figure out what's that lake, what's that river, what's that interstate. You know, I like knowing where I am. I like an overview of things. So I think that probably unusually tends me to want to talk to other pastors and get a feel for, like with JD, you know, like how Christianity is in the Research Triangle area of North Carolina. You know, what he's seeing in his 228 churches that have come from his church. And I would count all of his various sites, so we'll call it 240 churches. anyway, you know, I think I definitely am turned to have that kind of general or Episcopal or more oversighty kind of, I want to see big picture, what's happening in sub-Saharan Africa. Maybe just a personality or gifting, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's very clarifying, and help to explain how does gender come into the picture? How do you think about discipling the women who are members of your congregation? How does that fit in?
Well, I'm not going to personally. I mean, other than conversations after church or things I would write to them. There's a sister named Samantha who's trying to do some work in medieval history, and she was writing about, so I've written her back about that. I don't carry on the kind of discipling ministry to women that John Newton had through letters. But again, most of my time and effort goes into my public teaching, and that is every bit as much for the sisters in the church as it is for the brothers. Yep. So most of my, you know, 8:30 to 5:30 time at Capitol Hill Baptist Church, I'm working on things that assist the women as much as they assist the men. And trying to establish this culture of discipling in a church also is going to be encouraging that among the women as well.
Yeah. Well, that leads perfectly into my next question. And this is something that myself, having spent some time around Capitol Hill Baptist Church, is something that's, it was probably
You've
the first.
You've never done the internship.
I never have done the internship. Maybe I should.
It's just 5 months.
Maybe I should talk to some people.
I had guys
about
older
that.
Than me do the internship. Come on, man. It's just 5 months. How fun would that be to live here for 5 months? We'll pay for your housing, give you a stipend.
It would be fun. I would recommend it
Come
to anybody.
On.
It would be.
Your
a
wife
lot of fun.
Might like the idea of living in D.C. for 5 months.
She might.
Your housing is paid for, man.
You see, this is what makes you a good discipler.
You can feed your family.
This is what makes you a good discipler.
Enough, you can feed your family.
Well, I think, I mean, just the culture of discipleship. I mean, even just the brief months that I've spent around your church years ago, it's just you people are reaching out. They're investing, they're inviting you over, and you just want to turn around and start doing that for other people as well. It just feels...
Hope it's very trellis and viney, you know, Carl yes. Marshall and Tony Payne's great book, The Trellis and the Vine. Hope it's like that.
I mean, it feels natural, but it's not natural. I mean, it's a supernatural Holy Spirit work thing, but I'm wondering, that was something that you had to be deliberate about, a culture that you had to be deliberate about trying to foster, and I'm wondering, for a new pastor trying to create that culture of discipleship in his church, what's that first thing he needs to do? What's that first thing he needs to do to get started to down that road?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of flesh dying that has to go on. I mean, you have to care about those people. You have to see them as the sheep for whom Christ died. You know, the weird language Luke uses in the inspiration of the Holy Spirit is that God purchased these people with his own blood. So that's, they're not yours, fundamentally. They're his, and they're precious to him. So God needs to create, you need to pray for God to create a love like that for your people. You need to be praying for them regularly, so caring about what's going on in their lives. And if you're a young pastor, then I would say especially pray for the older widows in your church. You know, pray for the people who are most socially remote from where you are, and pray God give you a heart for them, and pray for them regularly. You know, this morning I sent out texts to two or three guys, just things I'd prayed for them in my quiet time this morning, just members of the church. So however you would do it with your size church and your use of technology and your relationships, just pray God give you that kind of love for the people in the church. And then you'll naturally, what will follow on from that is conversations about how they're doing. and find ways to highlight and encourage them taking that kind of initiative with each other in the church. Well, and hopefully that little book, Discipling, can be a good tool to use.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, again, leads me right into talking about what books. I would certainly recommend the Discipling book is a good place to start there. Again, another thing that people know, spending time around you, I think it's probably even how this conversation came about, you're constantly recommending books. You're using those in discipling relationships. What are some of the books that you recommend most often in discipling relationships?
Well, just to understand what I'm talking about in discipling, I would say grab Robert Coleman's Master Plan of Evangelism. Yeah. I think he overreads the Gospels, but I think he's in the right direction, and it will certainly give people an idea of what I'm talking about. Also, the book I just mentioned by Carl Marshall and Tony Payne, Trellis and Vine. Okay, so that's to help think about discipling. You mean what would I use when I'm actually discipling somebody? Almost anything works. I remember years ago with Rico Tice. Do you know Rico in London? Okay, with Rico, he came up to Cambridge one day for us just to hang out, and I just grabbed some local newspapers, and I said, okay, brother, I want you to read the editorial, and just paragraph by paragraph, I want you to explain to me what this writer is assuming. So anyway, we probably spent, I don't know, a couple hours just, you know, using the editorials of the newspapers in England to try to think Christianly and then think how you would communicate with somebody who has that mindset, you know, what they're assuming that's consonant with the gospel or that calls for the gospel, what they're assuming that's contrary to the gospel, that kind of fight the gospel. So you can use anything. Okay, standard things I like to use. I love to use J.I. Packer's book, Knowing God. It's just such a good book. So that's probably got to be my all-time favorite.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
It's a good one. Are there any others that... I mean, it's hard to top that one. Do you factor in things like, do you go with a smaller book if somebody is, you know, you just know somebody who doesn't have that kind of background?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Tripp Lee's book from a few years ago, The Good Life, is superb. So well written, clear. Don Carson's book, Praying with Paul, is good because it's just, each one is just a prayer of Paul, so each chapter is kind of self-contained. Mm-hmm. So... you don't, and it's true with Knowing God too. So you don't have to do the whole thing.
Yeah.
You can just do one chapter, and if that's all they ever do, they'll get good from it.
Yeah.
If you're wild and adventurous, a book I just gave somebody today to read is Pilgrim's Progress. I mean, that is such a joy. This brother is almost my age, and he's never read it. I kind of, you know, was acted condescending, trying to shame him. you know, guilt and shame are way underused pastoral gifts.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine you doing that, Mark. I just can't imagine you doing that, even in this conversation.
gave him a copy of Pilgrim's Progress, and I said, finish the book I gave you before. He's reading my book on the church, and we're talking about that.
Yep.
And then we'll go to Pilgrim's Progress.
One of the other things I've noticed, especially in more recent years, Mark, is you're not just training up people who come to you as clones of you, and they don't leave as clones of you, having spent
a lot
of time.
That's how
you'd
be a great intern, Colin.
Thank you.
I think you need to think about this. At least tell me you'll talk to your wife about it.
I'll talk to my wife about it.
Go ahead.
What is it? I mean, what do you have to think through when you're discipling somebody who is so different from you, certainly personality-wise, but I'm thinking different upbringing, different education, even different ethnicity. What sort of factors come into play there in discipling?
Again, I'm looking for the hunger to grow. That's the most important thing if they want to grow as a Christian. So that overcomes, you know, the fact that Arman and I, he was born Muslim. I was born as a Baptist. Arman was born in Kazakhstan. I was born in the U.S. But we both want to grow in Christ. And we've had reason to get to know each other and trust each other. You know, he became a Christian at about age 20 in college. So that's what I need. I need that desire to grow. That overcomes all the barriers you can think of.
And the desire is primarily revealed to you through initiative. Is that right? Just connecting back to what you're talking
about. And I think that shows it's confirmed in the kind of things that they talk about, the things they're interested in, the humility they'll mention as they talk about, that will be evident, rather, as they talk about themselves and others. Can they talk about bad things themselves? Can they rejoice in good things in others? Are they excited by good that happens to others? Do they want to see that? So when I have prospective interns here sometimes, you know, I'll say that I can tell who I would want in the internship program, not by the people who are always trying to ask the clever question and get my attention, their eyes are always on me, but by the ones who are kind of shepherding the whole group, who can tell the two or three who are being quiet and feeling left out, and they're deliberately trying to engage them and help them. That's the kind of sheepdog I'm looking for.
Mm. Wow, that's really helpful. I want to close on a couple questions just related to you and kind of your experience of discipleship. If someone were writing your biography as vignettes of people who discipled you...
Well, they should have been doing it earlier, because I've just been doing cleaning. I've been throwing out pictures. I've been getting rid of old material that there's no copies of.
Mark, you're a historian.
If anybody ever wanted to do that, this has been a bad month for them.
You're a historian. You know these things. You can't do these things.
No, I deliberately tried to make that hard. Like, I don't keep my daily schedule. I delete at the end of every day.
You're going to pull a Calvin. We're not going to be able to find you someday.
Washington burned all of his personal letters. You know, Sibs, I couldn't find anything on Sibs. That guy cloaked himself. So it's a long tradition of people, you know, living unto the Lord and then kind of leaving it alone.
Well, let's document a little bit of this digitally then. What would tell us about just a few of those people who discipled you and how that what that meant to you?
I don't think I ever was the object of the kind of discipling that I do with others.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's interesting. That's actually comforting to me, because when I think about this, I think about opportunities God's given me to be able to serve others in this way, but I don't really recognize this in my own life either.
And great sometimes, reason to do the internship.
Thank you. Well, sometimes I just kind of feel sorry for myself or something like that, but I go back and I can certainly see the Lord's work, and I can certainly see other people who invested in ways that were not so comprehensive or deliberate, but were nevertheless meaningful.
I think I had some outstanding brothers as friends of mine. So I wrote a little book called What is a Healthy Church? Mm-hmm. And I dedicated that to three men, Harold Purdy, Wally Thomas, and Ed Henniger. The first two are with the Lord. Ed, I think, is still in North Carolina. But Harold Purdy was my Southern Baptist pastor growing up. Very faithful man. A good preacher of the word. Always kind and caring toward me. Wally Thomas was the pastor of the Methodist church in town. Who, when I first became a Christian, I got to know him well. Wonderful, loving man. Just a great brother. Good conversation partner. Very pious. And then Ed Henniger was the Presbyterian pastor that I sat under when I was in college as an undergrad. And I actually saw Ed just a couple of years ago outside of Charlotte when I was lecturing at RTS. He was there. It was great to see him. He looks just the same. So I dedicated that book to a Baptist pastor and a Methodist pastor and a Presbyterian pastor. And I would say all three of those brothers, like from 1964 till 1982. So in those... 18 years, I was served very thoroughly in a public sense by them, and privately when I would go and seek them for counsel.
Yeah. Is it? I mean, they're all pastors. Not a coincidence. Yeah. From an early age, sounds like you were drawn to spending time outside of those required moments with pastors.
I think once I came to Christ, that's certainly true. Yeah.
So that, I mean, was that must have been indicative or illustrative in helping you to discern your own call to ministry, I would think.
Yeah, I think I don't know that I was worried about a call to ministry. I wanted people to come to Christ, and I want to take opportunities to tell people. And I spoke publicly in political stuff and, you know, youth and government kind of stuff. I never mind. I'm as unnervous talking to you as I am talking to 10,000 people.
Yeah.
It just does not. There's not a change in my blood pressure at all.
Yeah.
So it's always, even before I was a Christian, I think I was comfortable with public speaking.
So
I think for me, it just came naturally, if I'm concerned about Jesus and people knowing Jesus, just to talk to people about that, whether it's 10 people or 100 people. So and then as far as call to ministry, you know, I did the PhD because I was going to teach, and this church in Washington came up, and I just felt through a series of circumstances and praying about it, felt strongly led subjectively to do this. And since it wasn't sin to pastor a church, you know, I came to pastor this church. So it was, you know, in my Christian freedom, I exercised that. So am I called in the ministry? Well, I trust so. Have I had a Damascus Road experience? Well, not exactly. But then I didn't really expect that. So I think I'm exercising my Christian freedom, choosing to do something I want to do.
Yeah.
And it's something that I feel the Lord would want me to do.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I have a sort of generic called to ministry in the same sense that a Roman Catholic priest thinks they're ordained, you know, with a sacramental ordination for life.
Right.
Well, I think I've been called to pastor this church. I'm at some point maybe called to go teach or be one of those greeters at Walmart. I think I'd do well at that.
Well, you would be great at that, Mark. I'd highly recommend that. I'd encourage you to talk to your wife about it. Talk to Connie
Amen.
About it. All right, last question. Would you say that you are being discipled now?
You know, I'm not aware of anyone taking exactly that kind of initiative toward me, but I have so many rich friendships that when I'm in a discipling relationship, like with the guy who's struggling with sin or JD, though they may be taking initiative to come to me to learn, I feel like I must learn as much as they do from the conversations we have. So I feel very discipled by the guys that I think an outsider would say I am discipling.
Yeah. How do you help me to understand that mindset a little bit, Mark? I think it's very encouraging, but I think so many pastors, their regular experience is they're in their study and then they come out of the study and it's just crisis mode all the time. I mean, something's going wrong somewhere with a staff member, with an elder's wife, or with a
member.
Well,
I want to be very clear, brother. That is that pastor's fault.
Okay. Well, that's,
I want to lay the blame very clearly. That is the fault of the pastor.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get at.
If the pastor is only getting his face out of a book when there is a crisis, well, then, of course, all he'll see when he gets his face out of a book is a crisis. So he has to take initiative to build a culture of a whole other set of interactions with people that are positive, that are trying to pursue those that are he's not aware are in crisis. Now, some of them will end up being in crisis, but to pursue them just wherever they are in their lives, to try to encourage them and help them. And he has to take the initiative to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a helpful clarifying thing there, because I was just trying to imagine that kind of lifestyle where pastors feel like, you know, they have to go somewhere to recharge because I'm always pouring out. I'm always pouring out. I'm always giving.
Yeah, I get hugely recharged by that walk I've just had with Gordon. I mean, it's awesome. So,
but you don't think that's just a personality thing? You think that's something that pastors... Oh, yeah, help me understand that.
I'm sure it's partly a personality thing. But no, I also think what I just said a moment ago, I think is true. I think pastors, regardless of personality, I think pastors need to, as part of their job, seek out the members of their church and get to know them. And minister to them one-on-one. Charles Bridges, toward the end of the Christian ministry, his classic book on ministry, is great on this, about the ministry from the pulpit, but also the ministry when you come down from the pulpit and you go into the houses, the homes of the people you're ministering to. I think if you don't build that other speed, then you'll only have public word ministry and then deal with crises. And I think that if you just got those two, I think regardless of your personality, that's going to be exhausting. So I think for everybody's sanity, you got to figure out how, with your personality, it fits to build in, this, whether it's Baxter Pastoral Visitation or Dever one-on-one kind of discipling or Navigator style, whatever it is, you've got to build in proactively, spiritually concerned relationships with members of your church. And more than that, you want to build it in a 2 Timothy 2:2 way that is encouraging them to turn and do that with others.
Yeah, yeah. And and
pray for that publicly in the church. We'll often pray for things like this on Sunday night.
Yeah. Well, if anybody needed any more convincing, I hope they got it here. I encourage folks to pick up this book, Discipling: How to Help Others Follow Jesus, from Mark Dever, our guest here on the Gospel Coalition podcast from Crossway and Nine Marks. Again, Mark, thank you for taking the time here. And again, thanks just for encouraging us and the way that you take such initiative with so many of us. It's greatly appreciated, Mark.
Colin, it's always a joy hanging out with you. And the January class is full, but I think a year from next month will look great for the Hansons to be in D.C. for the fall.
I'll talk to Don. Thanks, Mark.
Love you, brother. Thanks for the time.
You've been listening to the Gospel Coalition podcast. For more gospel-centered resources, visit thegospelcoalition.org.
Support for the Gospel Coalition comes from listeners like you. Learn more and join us at tgc.org/donate.